Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, was Roman Abramovich poisoned? We'll have the latest shortly. Remember the SSIA scheme, a new pension plan for private sector workers, promises a government euro for every three that you save. Following the money, the head of the Garda National Economic Crime Bureau on rooting out bribery and corruption, and with fuel prices remaining at record highs, going electric might be an option for some drivers. But what should you know about the practicalities of an EV? We'll have advice. And how does what you eat and drink impact on your skin? Consultant dermatologist Dr. Rosemary Coleman has the answer, and she'll take your questions too. So do text us this morning, 51551, email today cb@rte.ie, or on Twitter, we are at Today with Claire. Now, the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, has said that reintroducing restrictions is not on the agenda, even though COVID case numbers are in the thousands every day, and that's just the recorded numbers. The Emergency Department Task Force has requested that public health measures are reconsidered by the government, but the minister says serious measures would be needed to have any significant impact. In a moment, we'll get political reaction from Elaine Loughlin of The Examiner, but first I'm joined by Professor Sam McConkie, infectious disease specialist at RCSI University of Medicine and Health Sciences, and also Yvonne Williams, GP at the Shannon Medical Centre. You're both welcome. And Professor McConkie, if I start with you, Minister Donnelly, we heard there in the news bulletin on his way into the cabinet meeting saying that it's important to get the booster, but he also said last night that serious measures would be needed in order to curb this sub-variant. But as we know, and as far as we know, government is not considering any fresh restrictions. How do you feel about this? Should fresh restrictions be considered now?
It's not clear to me that even a serious heavy series of restrictions like 2 kilometres, everyone wearing masks like we had, you know, in March, April of 2020, that would even control the spread of BA2. This is a much more infectious virus than the one back in 2020. And even if we're to do all that like we did before, which no one would like, there's no evidence that would really work to control it and get us out of this problem. They're trying that in China and largely failing presently. Whereas 2 years ago, when they tried the social distancing in China, it succeeded very well, as it did in Ireland. So I think it's just not a good idea to try that sort of limitations on household visits, limitation on 2 kilometres, and closing all non-essential industries. I think that would be the wrong way to go now. Mm-hmm. We're not really facing that sort of dire, escalating, exponential rise in sickness and death that we saw 2 years ago. So we're in a different situation now.
Okay, well, let's leave the 2 kilometres aside, because that's at the extreme end. But what about mask mandates, for example? Surely that would help.
So I have been saying the last 3-4 weeks, as masks are no longer mandatory, that we should all still be wearing them in crowded indoor places, in all indoor places, and in outdoor crowded places. So I think there's a lot of wisdom in wearing masks. Particularly, I think the justification is that there's substantial numbers of tens of thousands of people in Ireland who've had transplants and are vulnerable due to their treatments or their underlying diseases, and they're still at risk of catching COVID and getting sometimes quite sick with it. So we should be wearing masks to protect the vulnerable. So I would strongly recommend all of your listeners to continue to wear masks outdoors in crowded places or indoors when they're not eating and drinking. Yes, definitely.
What about the impact of all of this on the health service? And we see the figures today, it's around the 1600 mark in hospital being treated for or with COVID, and we know that some people have COVID and no symptoms in hospital, they're in hospital for something else. What are you seeing?
So the big problem is really massive overcrowding, and that's why, as you described earlier, the emergency medicine group are feeling the pressure. When the hospitals are really, really full, people end up sort of lodging cheek by jowl, trolley by trolley in the EDs of our country, and that's a really bad place to be cared for. So there's a massive current problem with hospital overcrowding, and it's a matter then of in the long term, Claire, unfortunately, I can't see any other way than ensuite single rooms and more beds. That's a long-term 5-10 year capital investment program that I think many of us now realise. We need single rooms. We need ensuite rooms to prevent the cross-infection in hospital, and we need more beds in hospital. That won't happen in the next 2 weeks. So in the next 2 weeks, I can't see any other alternative than cancelling and postponing some scheduled care, which of course is exactly the opposite of what we want to be doing. We want to be catching up on the waiting list, but in the short term, that's the only solution that's sort of feasible and available to us tomorrow.
Okay, and there will be disruption, and I know that Colm Henry on Morning Ireland from the HSE said that the disruption is already happening, and we know that there is a huge catch-up job underway, isn't there, because of all the delays we've had over the last 2 years.
We were hoping at these current times to be catching up, as you said, on people on waiting lists and so on for really important things like hip replacements and knee replacements, or, you know, corneal transplants that help, let's say, the blind to see or the lame to walk. Those things are profoundly effective and good value for money, and there's no argument that they're really useful things. And those have been deferred for the last couple of years, and the waiting lists are longer. So we are behind on those, that's certainly the case. But fixing them tomorrow in a hospital that's really overcrowded, or all of our hospitals are overcrowded, isn't really possible, unfortunately. As I said, it's back to more ensuite single rooms. We need more beds and more single room beds.
All right, well, we're not going to get those in the short term, as you've said. Sam, will you stay with us? Because Dr. Yvonne Williams, as I said, is with us, and Yvonne is of course a GP. You've been listening to what Sam was saying there, Yvonne, so it doesn't matter what we do now. Even if you had a full scale lockdown, BA2, it's so infectious that that's not going to have an impact on spread. Do you agree?
I don't think anyone wants to see a lockdown coming back, but I think every person I have met who works in healthcare have been asking, pleading, demanding of the government to bring back in mask wearing. We know from the WHO, the CDC, even from our own national advice centres that mask wearing works. And it's very hard to understand why the government are refusing to bring it back in. Perhaps they see it as a sign of failure to admit that we got rid of it too quickly, that we weren't prepared for this variant. There seems to be a sense of sort of hiding behind NPHET being disbanded and waiting for this new group to meet. But everybody working on the front line knows that we need to start wearing masks again. So we really need some leadership from the government. We need them to step up. I saw reported that the Mirror this week said that they've brought back in mask wearing in the Dáil Bar, limited numbers there to 20 because they're considered very essential. Well, I think nurses, doctors, teachers, our bus drivers, they're essential too. And they deserve the same level of protection when they're going into shops or into a restaurant to get their lunch. So it's, you know, you can see it in the schools, we can see it in healthcare. There's at least 6,000 workers out sick. Many of my colleagues are out sick, many nurses in the community are out. Some of them have long COVID. They may be out for months, they may not return to work feeling well, or they may return part-time. So we really need to step up and try and do something to just slow down the pace of this current wave.
So you're talking about an intervention at government level, not just advice, because that's what we have at the moment. Are you talking about a mandate?
Well, I think the advice isn't working. You know, people are mainly ignoring it. And what's happening then is people who are vulnerable, my patients who have a chronic illness and the elderly, are starting to retreat back home again. They're afraid to go out now. They're worried about getting the new variant. They've had a booster, but it's months ago, and they know other people with boosters are getting sick. So we're starting to see that anxiety creeping back into our vulnerable population. And there's been nothing done, to be honest, to help them or to alleviate that concern. Any of us going into a supermarket at the moment can see, or going, you know, into a petrol station to pay for a petrol or diesel, you're surrounded by people. The 2 metre distancing has gone out the window, and there's, you know, not many people wearing masks either.
What do you say to that, Sam?
I think there are certainly other things we could do. I'd like to see supermarkets, for example, from 8 a.m. to 11 open up with the old restrictions saying you've got to wear a mask to come in, the staff are wearing masks, and everyone stays 2 metres away, so that the vulnerable folk can feel safe and welcome as they must go to do their weekly shopping or daily shopping. So I think we certainly could do more in advocating for masks by example.
Surely, though, we should be mandating masks on public transport, for example, at the very least.
Yeah, that's a public policy decision. I feel, you know, we've sort of lived under mandates, if you like, for a couple of years. Now I feel that with consistent messaging and leadership, I think the usage and wearage of masks could be improved.
Mm-hmm. But Yvonne says that's not there. The messaging and the leadership isn't there. Do you agree?
I think all the sort of political and media have really been distracted for 5 or 6 weeks because of the trouble in Ukraine. We sort of forgot about COVID, and unfortunately it hasn't gone away, nor is it going to go away. We're likely to face, you know, waves like this in the future as new, more transmissible, slightly different variants come along. So this is the reality of living with COVID, and we have to find ways of doing this so we can still have staff going to work with the minimum amount of disruption. And leading through this, I would say, is a big challenge. in a general way, I would say that in Ireland, we've actually had reasonably good leadership and very good outcomes. In terms of excess mortality in Ireland over the last 2 years has been much, much less than most other European countries, certainly less than US excess mortality. So I feel in general, if I was to evaluate the performance of Cavan over the last, since February 2020, when they were a bit slow getting started on the response, but once we got going, I feel we've done a very good job in general. So it is a challenge now. We're in a new phase, more transmissible variant, that's not so much killing people, more just causing people to get unwell and be at home. Leading through this is a new challenge, and it's going to be, you know, a new normal, if you like, and finding the happy spot that we're all reasonably comfortable with in that new normal, I think, is going to take a bit of time.
So then that would suggest that we're now living with COVID. And are we talking then, or should we be talking about the need to scale back on isolation times? We know the impact that isolation times for people who test positive with COVID, it's having a huge impact on our healthcare, also on businesses and in schools and so on. Is it time to look at that, Sam?
I think that's certainly a really good question and a really good discussion to be had, particularly if people have a low viral load or antigen negative, a very mild, almost asymptomatic COVID, then the idea of them going back to work earlier is a good one. As you know, the restrictions were initially 14 days out of work, then 10 days, now 7 days, and that could conceivably shorten even more, particularly in subgroups of people who are well, they're not coughing, and their antigens are go negative quickly. So I think that is a sort of practical, feasible change in public policy that I would advocate for and like to see at national level. It's a matter of doing that in a way that keeps the vulnerable safe, as your previous doctor spoke about, particularly in hospitals, of course, where we have a duty of care to the very vulnerable people in there. So I don't see that working for hospital workers, yeah. But I see for a lot of the others of society, we could get back to work earlier, yeah.
Yvonne, you're coming to the end of your own isolation period. I know that you had COVID. I mean, what do you think about people going back to work if they're feeling well, testing negative perhaps at 5 days, should they be allowed back into the workplace?
Yeah, I think if you have 3 consecutive days where you're antigen negative and you haven't had any symptoms or you've had minimal symptoms, absolutely. But as you said, not perhaps for people working in ICU or people doing the sort of job that I would be doing, where you might be seeing people, you know, in the middle of their chemotherapy or someone who's very vulnerable, newborn babies and so on. I would love to see just some clear, simple messaging coming from government to help the frontline workers. We never wanted the clapping. We never wanted all the accolades. We just want some practical help and mask wearing. We know from national, international evidence, it does work. It will help. And if we can just get that message out to the public again, if not for themselves, then for perhaps their neighbour or their relatives, just to get the masks back on, it would be great.
Perhaps there's an opportunity to do that now ahead of Easter, because it didn't happen before the 4-day St. Patrick's weekend. We know that there were a lot of gatherings, parades, pubs, people having their own parties and so on, and that led to a surge in cases. Do you think that there should be a very specific and strong message ahead of the Easter break?
I think most people have probably made their plans at this stage, and if we can't even get advice, you know, on the mask wearing, it's probably unrealistic to expect advice on indoor gatherings. But I think people are intelligent. They're going to look at the numbers, look at the hospitalizations. They know there's a lot of COVID around, and I think people will hopefully take that into account when they're making their plans for the holidays.
Bernard has been in touch to suggest something that we heard when the pandemic was at its peak, Sam, with 1,600 patients in hospitals, 6,000 staff out sick. Why has no serious consideration been given to assigning 2 or 3 hospitals to deal specifically with COVID patients? Now, we had that suggestion, didn't we, earlier in the COVID pandemic?
Yeah, the Chinese did that as well, with building special COVID isolation hospitals. It involves a lot of transporting people and moving people around as a challenge, because all of the 26 or 27 emergency departments in Ireland, of course, are screening and testing and detecting people with COVID every day. So then you'd have to move those people to a different location. So the feasibility of driving everyone around to a separate location is a bit challenging. What we do within the big hospitals is have 1 or 2 wards that are designated COVID wards, and then essentially all the people in those 6-bedded units and even all the people in the whole 30-bed ward all have COVID together, if you like. And that is how you do it at sort of a hospital institution level. So most Irish hospitals have been segregating COVID patients into separate sections at each hospital venue.
Yeah, with great difficulty, as we know. Sam McConkie, Professor Sam McConkie and Dr. Yvonne Williams, thank you both. And Elaine Loughlin, Deputy Political Editor with the Irish Examiner, is with us now. Elaine, thanks for joining us. So we had different perspectives there from medics. Are we expecting any major discussion at Cabinet today on potential COVID measures?
Well, certainly the reintroduction, Claire, of COVID measures doesn't seem to be up for discussion at today's Cabinet meeting that's going on at the moment. There was a discussion amongst Fianna Fáil members last night. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly briefed them virtually on what is happening, and he basically gave that stark figure of several hundred thousand new COVID cases a week. He said that, you know, if we're registering between 10 and 15,000 cases a day through PCR and antigen at the moment, we can almost be sure that the real figure is several times that amount already. But on the flip side of that, he said that the advice coming from both health experts and the CMO, Tony Houlihan, is that further measures are not required at this point. And perhaps it goes back to what Sam McConkie was saying just a few moments ago, that even the most strict of lockdowns now might not stop the spread of this new sub-variant. And maybe that's the reason for not requiring measures or not seeing the benefit in measures at this time.
And yet we know that the impact in hospitals, it's very severe, with over 1,600 patients being testing positive for COVID in our hospitals. And we know that doctors and nurses are really calling now for something to be done to help them on the front line.
Yes, and I think politicians and those in government have been eager to stress that the numbers of people with COVID in hospital, up to perhaps half of those are incidental. So they're people who come in to be treated for other injuries, other illnesses, and then go on to be tested positive for COVID. But obviously that has knock-on implications on the hospital system. Even if a person is being treated for something else, if they have to, or if they're positive for COVID, they have to go into isolation, and there's other measures that have to be put in place. So that is putting a massive strain on the hospital system. And we know that health experts and the likes of the INMO and even the Irish Patients Association have been calling for more measures, especially around mandatory face masks on public transport that you spoke about a couple of minutes ago, Claire. Those in the healthcare service would be asking that perhaps those types of measures be reintroduced at this point in time.
And we're coming up to the end of the month, aren't we, as well, Elaine, when the mask mandate, the legislation underpinning it, runs out. So something would need to be done pretty quickly.
Yes, and I think politically there wouldn't be a great appetite to reintroduce mandatory measures or talk about reintroducing legislation again after all that we've been through over the past 2 years. And you'll remember in the autumn and winter of last year, when the government was rolling back on some of the restrictions, the key message that the Taoiseach and others had at that time were, we may slow down and pause the rolling back of measures, but we won't be reintroducing, or we won't be taking a step backwards. And I think they really want to stick with that message now. And I think hoping and pinning all hopes to the fact that this sub-variant is very contagious, and we see it absolutely raging through the community now, I think politicians will be hoping that perhaps it's not as virulent or as serious in most people when they do catch it.
Elaine, another issue I wanted to ask you about is the cost of Ireland providing humanitarian support for refugees arriving from Ukraine. Now, that cost is expected to reach 2.8 billion, and that is the same amount, to put it into context, as a typical budget spend. Is there any sense emerging that it will severely impact this year?
Yes, well, this is something that ministers are, we do know, speaking about as we speak at that Cabinet meeting this morning. Minister Michael McGrath has been working with his colleagues across departments like children, like housing, like health, to come up with an estimate. And it really is only an estimate at this stage, because we don't know how many people will arrive in this country, for how long they will stay, and what kind of support they will need. The figure that Michael McGrath has currently come up with is around 400 million for every 10,000 people who need assistance for an entire year. Justice Minister Helen McEntee was out last night and confirmed that we have around 13,500 Ukrainians here already. So we know that that's possibly beyond that 400 million into 500 million already if they do require help for the next year. But the cabinet will be told today that we could reach 2.5, 2.8 billion okay. if we get it in excess of 100,000 Ukrainians here.
Elaine, thank you very much. Elaine Loughlin there, Deputy Political Editor with the Irish Examiner. I just wanted to let you know that the funeral of the Irish cameraman Pierre Zakshevsky, who died in Ukraine earlier this month, is taking place in Dublin this morning at the Church of Perpetual Succour in Fox Rock. The Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, is there along with representatives of the Taoiseach and the President. Now, we spoke, you might remember, to Pierre's brothers, Greg and Nick. They paid tribute to Pierre just a couple of days after they got the news about his death. And Pierre, as you know, was working with Fox News while filming the war in Ukraine. And we're thinking today of his family, his friends and his colleagues as they say their final goodbyes. Coming up next on the programme, was Roman Abramovich poisoned? And what can we expect from talks between Russia and Ukraine in Istanbul today?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.